Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
It's Tuesday, the 14th of April.
Coming up today, we talk to one of Ireland's favourite 70-year-olds about the start of cocooning.
It's Comanche Court going into the lead shooting line. It's fighting back Circus Dart. It's coming back for more, not for a flat of the board. But it's Comanche Court in the lead as he races towards the line. Comanche Court by length is going to take the elite racing club Brian Purnell. And Comanche Court wins it for Kevwald. At the line.
We speak to Enda Stevens about Stephen Kenny in English Premier League football during COVID-19.
Mayo's Andy Moran and Enda King of the Sports Surgery Clinic talk about how players will be able to ramp back up to competitive levels of fitness, despite the statement from the GAA's Alan Milton just now.
A number of weeks ago, at the very outset of this crisis, a number of contingency plans were drawn up, and they still exist. But I don't know how prudent it would be for the GAA to come out with fixed programmes or plans and then to be seen to be changing them every week or two.
An Irish pentathlete, Natalia Coyle, tells us how to train for five sports in one lockdown day.
Game on 2FM.
All that and much, much more between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Ruby, how are things today?
Great, Marie. Yourself?
Good as well, actually, yeah. Despite all the doom and gloom around the place.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful day, I suppose. The Tour de France looks like going. There's going to be no football for a while. But at least the sun is shining, Marie.
Yeah, we can have our own sport in the background.
We can. Yeah, exactly.
Get the kids out, get them racing around the place.
Yeah, how long before they all start fighting and then have to make up again? It's great fun, isn't it?
That's life though, isn't it?
It is. Exactly it.
It sure is. Yeah, interesting there, just Malin Milton on the GA, I'd say. It'll be a while before we know what's happening. So he makes a good point. It is pointless for them to come out and start making statements and trying to outline plans when nobody really knows what's going on. And I think that if there was a case when they started predicting things and they didn't come through, then people would be disappointed. So it's probably as well off just wait and see the next few weeks and how things progress.
That's a two-sided coin. I do think we need something to look forward to. Even if it doesn't happen, at least you can hope that it's going to happen by then. And then we have to wait for the next deadline and we start to hope again. But there's no point in being disappointed all the time. If there was some little bit of ray of light or some hope or some date that we were all working towards, who knows what could happen. Might put us all in a better humour. Make us proactive, Marie.
You might be a little better at dealing with disappointment than me now. I'm not sure I could take it.
Yeah, but sure, don't even be disappointed for a day and then they give a new date, another month's time that we can all start looking towards, or 6 months' time or something.
We'd be like hamsters, just going round and round in circles all the time.
But sure, look, it's like living in the movie Groundhog Day, except Groundhog Day was only 2 hours.
Yeah. Any good news?
Any good news? No bad news. Sure, everything's the same as it was yesterday. We're all looking forward. Although you did get the feeling talking to Pat Horgan last night that he kind of knew GAA was a long way away.
He wasn't in great form about it, all right. I think he seemed to have got the heads up that they weren't going to get the announcement that they were hoping for over the next few days, that they would have something to aim for. And that was quite obvious, I think, from what he was saying to us anyway. And he just seemed a little bit disappointed, and I understand why.
A little bit more realistic maybe than I'm being.
Yeah,
I'm looking for hope. I'm looking for hope. I can't be dealing with reality.
Well, it's like you've turned into a different person, like a glass half full, and you're so positive all the time.
Marie, I was always one for looking forward. There's no point in looking back. I don't want to know how COVID-19 appeared. I want to know how we get rid of it and how we get back to normality. That's the way I'm looking at it. We can't change what's gone past. We can only affect the future.
Wow, you're a philosopher.
Well, you had to have philosophies when you got as injured as often as I did. You had to try and pick something out of things, and picking the way forward is always what I chose.
Good. Right, well, I'll try and be a bit more like you for the next 55 minutes anyway. See how that goes.
54, actually, Marie.
Okay, of course. So it's your dad's birthday. Did you get him anything?
Unfortunately not. We did have a present organised that couldn't come true at the moment, but we will eventually get around to it whenever this, what do you call them? Not sanctions. What are we under? Restrictions.
Restrictions, yeah.
Whenever the restrictions are lifted.
Well, Ted joins us now on the line. Ted, are you happy with that?
Happy with what, Marie? I'm happy I'm 70 today. And
your present will be on the way when the restrictions are over.
That was always coming. I was going to delay that anyway.
Well, so you're 70 now, and we were musing earlier about when you've turned 70, cocooning comes into place. So have you done anything different today that you didn't do yesterday?
Not really. I've been confined in my own little mind and world here in the yard and the farm since probably I didn't go to shelter. I watched it on the box, and I didn't go racing since because there's only a few days on and I had no runner. And I've plenty to do here at home, so I've no real reason. I'm not a big social person. I've no real reason to go out or do anything else in the meantime. So I'm really one of the lucky ones. I haven't missed anything. I'm watching all the replays of on racing TV of Cheltons and Liverpools and Ascots and everything else. And I'm a racing fan and different sports occasions, football matches and the golf and at night time. And during the day, I'm kept busy all day long up till I get up in the morning around 7 o'clock. And I'm going all day until this beautiful weather we're having. It's absolutely marvellous. I'm only glad that the cocooning or lockdown and everything has come in such great weather. I mean, would it be terrible if it was in December and dark at 5 o'clock in the evening and raining and frost and be confined to barracks all the time?
Jeez, you've a great outlook, Ted.
Well, I'm glad. When you get to be 70, Marie, and I hope you've had as good a time as I have. You have a great outlook as well, too. It's great. I've had a great life and I'm looking forward to a bit more of it.
Ted, though, like you have a lot to keep you busy and, you know, family around you and horses outside. But for other people who are of the same vintage of you, I imagine it's not as easy as maybe putting down the hours as you're finding it. Like, and having these restrictions in place, if you're, you know, a fit 70-year-old who wants to be out and about and kind of doing what you're usually doing and been told to stay inside, it must be difficult.
It must be dreadful. Difficult is not the word. It must be dreadful. I'd hate to be confined now. I mean, it must be. My heart goes out to the children that can't get out and the adults and everybody else. It must be absolutely shocking to be living somewhere where you're confined to a house. When we got married, first of all, we were living in Lakelands there and in a nice house, semi-detached, but we were in a housing estate. And if you had four kids living there and they were confined to the house, which many people are all the time, it must be absolutely mentally, whatever about physically, mentally it would be. Absolutely, especially if you're an outgoing person. Most people like to get out for a walk or do a bit of gardening. I see the people here now walking from the village of Kill over to Johnstown and back again and around that kind of thing. But most of them are confined and it must be dreadful. That's why I say, I mean, I have absolutely nothing to complain about. I'm one of the real lucky ones. I can walk out around the fields and the garden. Ruby's little one rang me the other day, Isabel, to say, Grandad, you're be cocooned from next Tuesday on and you can only go to the garden. Well, I said, I'm lucky enough. I said, my garden runs right up, back up about a half mile behind me and I can go up to the river and with the swimmer and do things. And, you know, I'm one of the lucky ones. And I know that well, Marie. I know that only too well. And I feel sorry for the different people that can't get out, people that like to walk or do things. It must be absolutely mentally tough.
Dad, I know the answers to these questions because I probably talk to you three times a day, but economically and health-wise, how long more do you think people can sustain a lockdown like this? Or how soon are we going to have to start making small movements and getting things going again?
Well, I'd say for people's mental well-being, as long as everything else, I know the government have a big job to do and the health and everything else to try and restrict it as best they can. But I'd say, I mean, the disease, the cure could be worse if something doesn't happen to people, because people like to get out and walk. I mean, people like to play a game of golf. Kids like to get to a playground. They like to interact with other children and all that thing. And you can't have that. Whatever about bad health, bad mental health is the worst thing that can happen to people. And it's very hard to cure that. That I guarantee you. So I think there's something, I don't know. I'm not qualified enough to say what they should do, but definitely people have to get a bit of movement on different things. It's a difficult job to try and curtail the spread of the disease and to maybe let people move around as well too. But I'm sure there's people around that could come up with a better solution than what we have now. I mean, it's the best one that's available, but I'm sure there's somebody around that has another solution. I can't for the life of me see, maybe at the moment with the amount of deaths, I think 42 today, which is huge, and probably more to come. But like two fellas playing a game of golf are keeping social distance, and I don't think if they're healthy and well. I suppose if you had some way of detecting whether people were free of it or not, I'm not qualified enough, but something will have to be done to in order to alleviate the position. As I said, I'm one of the lucky ones, but there must be people all over that are claustrophobic is the word at this stage.
And Ted, you've seen foot and mouth clothes racing on a couple of occasions. Does it give you a bit of solace knowing that it has bounced back before from being closed and potentially can do it again?
Yeah, well, foot and mouth is an animal thing. I think it's making too much of foot and mouth and not enough of what we have now. This is human lives at stake, whatever about animals. I think this is a huge, no comparison in the two. We've bounced back. People have bounced back over the years from all sorts of things, like the world wars and all sorts of things. Nature of people is to bounce back. Those that survive will bounce back. And some people will be stronger and some people it'll leave a mark on them for the rest of their lives. But that's part of life, isn't it?
Unfortunately, it is, Dad. So I hope you enjoy the rest of your birthday, and I'll probably talk to you in 45 minutes' time anyway.
You probably will, Ruth.
Best of luck.
Thanks so much, Ted.
Thanks, Marie.
Thanks for taking the call. We appreciate it. And happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
He's in great form, Ruby.
He's always in good form, Marie.
That's where you get it from.
Obviously.
Right, look, take a break and we'll be back with Enda Stevens. Game on
2FM. Welcome back to Game On this beautiful Tuesday evening, or glorious Tuesday evening, whatever way you want to put it. But next on the line we have, he's definitely a rock in the Irish defence at the moment, Marie, isn't he?
Yeah, if we just had a defence and a team and a match. But yeah, I mean, when we do,
he is the rock in the middle of it. Enda Stevens, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Oh, we're great, thank God.
Ruby's great. I'm not so great. I'm looking to be great, but Ruby is brilliant, Enda.
Yeah. I know, it's good to hear.
I'm looking for some good news. How are you keeping?
I'm doing okay, yeah, not too bad. Just trying to see out this tough time, but it is what it is.
Sorry, Marie, you say it is what it is, Enda. What are you having to do to stay fit, Enda, at the moment? Obviously, there's great uncertainty about when there'll be a comeback, if there'll be a comeback, but surely as a club and a professional athlete, you're taking over and doing plenty.
Yeah, we've been all set like programs up, and we've all joined in on there's like four or five of us per group and a WhatsApp group with each strength and conditioning coach. We've all been sent home with a bike, certain weights and certain kind of things that we can do, and they send us in programs to do each morning.
And I know that's an easy enough thing to do when a fitness coach is standing behind you telling you to keep at it and you have another 10 reps to do. But how are you finding it on your own, motivating yourself?
Yeah, it's obviously tough to kind of motivate yourself, but you kind of, well, me personally, I'll just stick to a routine that wake up in the morning, bit of breakfast and straight in, get it done, then have a bit of lunch, and then we go back to doing a gym session, or it might be an afternoon session. You might have to go out and find the field outside and do your one bit of exercise that you're allowed to do outside on a football pitch or on a Gaelic pitch or on a rugby pitch, you know.
And then just in terms of what's been monitored, like, do you have to like kind of put in what food you're eating, like how much sleep you're getting? Like, is everything accounted for during this time, or is it just whatever you can provide?
Well, with the smartphones these days, we have apps. So we have a Watt bike. We all got sent home with a Watt bike. So there's a Watt bike app. So they'll send in the certain program that they want you to do on the Watt bike. And we've all been sent home with a heart rate belt. So we have to, and you download the app to that, and then you sign up both of them, and they just monitor everything that they need to see in terms of your distance you're covering. Yeah, max RPM and all that. So the science behind it now is something else. And in terms of food now, they don't really focus on food. They give you recipes and tell you what to be eating, what not to be eating, but they just trust you in that aspect.
I suppose you are adults. You have to be trusted somewhere along the way, but I was obviously the opinion of the guy that invented the Watt bike was evil.
Oh, he was, you're right. And the fellow who came up with all the programs on it is even more evil.
they are sickening things. And they've obviously always had a very good work ethic. I mean, you didn't get to where you are in Sheffield United without going around the houses. You played a good bit in the League of Ireland before you went across the water. It was a long journey, but you have gotten right to the top.
Yeah, it was long. It kind of started out, like, obviously I learned my trade in the League of Ireland and I started out, and then I got that big opportunity and it didn't really work out for me. Whether it was a case of I wasn't ready or I don't really think I dedicated myself too much, but I kind of learned as I went on, and thankfully I got that hunger and desire in my belly then and the determination to kind of get myself back up to the top, and thankfully I met the right club at the right time in Sheffield United and we got there.
And I was reading about you today, and there was a really good piece by David Snaid about you and your journey, and there was some very funny quotes from Keith Ward in it, that you lived together. And my favourite one was that he said that one night you were going out and you managed to lock the car keys into the house and the house keys into the car, and you couldn't go anywhere.
No, we couldn't go anywhere. We're going on a night out, and Ward used to take ages to do his hair. He only had a little bit of hair back then before he went to Turkey. But by that time, it used to take so long to get ready. And we were just all over the place because he used to have a thing where he used to do his hair, but then for about 20 minutes to a half an hour after, he used to have to put a hat on, like a cap or a woolly hat on. It was his routine. So I was getting fed up with him, and then we all got muddled around the place, and the both of us found ourselves locked out of the house, and I had to ring my sister and get my sister to drive over from Drimley. The cabinet with the spare keys.
I'd say it was some crack living with him now.
Oh, he keeps you on your toes, put it that way. He's one of a kind, I'd say.
And obviously a great teammates all through your career, but when you're in Sheffield United, there's obviously your four more or three more Irish teammates there in John Egan, Damien McGoldrick and Colin Robinson. Did they help you settle in Sheffield United, having Irish counterparts there?
Well, I was one of the first ones. When I joined Chef U, the only Irish, I can't really think, Daniel Lafferty was there. Was there any more Irish? Daniel Lafferty's the only one I can think of. Sorry if I've forgotten one, but it always helps, like especially when you're going away with Ireland. I was relatively new with the Irish squad. And then Eags joined that summer. I think Didgey did as well, and Callum Robinson, and we kind of came into the Irish team and the setup. We kind of came in together as one, and then it was just easier to bed in. So it helped in that way. And obviously, you just kind of click. Like, I'd spend most of my days going for coffees and that, and going for a bit of lunch with Eags and your days off. So you're one of my best mates in the squad. So it does help a lot, yeah.
You were having an incredible season with Sheffield United. You had 28 games played. You're only 5 points behind Chelsea, and you know, hovering on a Champions League spot. It must have been very disappointing on a personal level to have the season pulled up when it was.
It was. I think when it first started to break, we never really seen it get to this extent. And then obviously when it did, it was a bit surreal. It was a bit scary. And obviously now you kind of just got to put your safety and people's safety into it first, and hopefully we can get through this and get the season back on track, and then we can get that kind of competitiveness back into us to push for the European spot, which would be a fantastic achievement for us.
It'd be huge for a club like Sheffield United. But in the last season, you played all 45 games. You played 45 the year before. You played in all 28 games this season. You obviously stay quite naturally fit yourself, and you don't seem overly prone to injury either.
No, but funny you say it. I picked up a little calf strain just before the season was called off. So, timing-wise, that kind of suited me, because hopefully now I won't miss a game. I'll stay fit. But, I've always been kind of lucky enough not to pick up many injuries or muscle strains, and it was the one thing that I kind of got in order when I went down to Portsmouth in League Two. It was the first time I've probably in my career been to my max fitness and being in the best shape, and I put that down to Paul Cook getting me in the best shape possible, and he used to run us ragged in pre-season, and it was the first kind of time I felt that, and it just benefited my game, and then I kind of had that hunger and desire then to keep that up. I didn't want to go back to feeling that blowing feeling in games and like tiredness and that, and that's where they kind of got my career back on track.
And looking to the future, are you loosely planning for any time, or what way are you working it?
To get back
training and together and all that. Like, do you have any idea at all?
They kind of give us a guideline to say, well, we're looking at May. I think it's the 6th of May now we're looking at. So I think we're going to push for that, and I think they'll re-examine it when sooner to the time. But they're coming up with, I think they're really working hard and coming up with ways to find out a safe as possible way to get the season back on track, because I think it will benefit a lot of people, you know, even if you are still in isolation. But we could get the games played behind closed doors, just televise the games and have it like you would with a World Cup, just see out the season with two or three games possibly being played in a day or over the weekend and that, and just trying to give some sort of entertainment to people, so it'll help them stay indoors.
And as a club with so much at stake, just given the position on the table, is that something that you'd be happy with?
If it had to be behind closed doors, obviously we'd have to get our heads around it. If there's a way that we could get the fans back into the stadiums, it'd be brilliant, because it won't be the same without the fans. It's clear and obvious, but it's just something that as players and as a club, we'll have to get our heads around and just kind of try and do anything possible to get this season finished.
Obviously, on an international front end, there's been great change in the Irish camp. Chunk, or Stephen Kenny has now taken over. You must be looking forward to the start of a new era.
Yeah, it seems so far away, like, obviously, with all that's going on, but it's something to look forward to. Obviously, he's got such a good reputation in the League of Ireland. He's probably the most successful manager the league has had, and he's going to bring in his own ideas and his own style, and he's going to implement what he tried to do with the 21s, or what he was doing with the 21s into the senior team, and it's going to be good. It's something to really look forward to.
Has he been in touch with players yet? I know he said he had talked to Seamus Coleman.
I've not heard anything from. I'm not sure if Eags or Didsy has. I haven't really spoke to them much.
So he hasn't set up a WhatsApp group.
Not yet. I think there's still a few old ones floating around, so he might just add himself into one of them, or Seamus might add him into it, and then we can get going.
Or you'll be invited to a Zoom call, all the rage.
Yeah. Oh, you haven't been on that, but I'm hearing all about it, yeah.
Oh, very good. And just like the time that you have, I know that you used to play a lot of FIFA. Are you doing all that now, like playing video games, just trying to find things to pass the hours?
Well, I've got a 10-month-old baby, so she's keeping me busy, and I've got a dog as well, so I take him out on a walk and that. So I've been kept busy. I didn't really sign up to be as a footballer. You're more like a part time dad, because you're in training every day. You're away weekends, and I'm like a full time stay at home dad now. So it's a bit stressful. Takes some time to get used to, but slowly but surely I'm getting the grips with it.
Ruby's nodding along here in agreement.
Yeah, he'd know it himself. He probably got better holidays than me.
Yeah, I was usually more of a hindrance, because I was like a fifth child for Gillian when I was injured.
A real moody, cranky one.
Yeah, it was easier to look after the 10-month old than it was look after me.
And Enda, just in terms of what's going on with the Premier League players and the Players Together scheme, there's a huge amount of spotlight on you guys at the moment. Is it a bit unfair, do you think, that you are the ones that everyone is looking at now and talking about your wages?
I think the criticism was unfair, yeah, because I think a lot of footballers do stand up and they do kind of represent themselves very well in terms of community and charities. And I thought it was a bit uncalled for, and we do try and we do help and we do realise the responsibilities that we do have, and it is a big responsibility because so many kids look up to you and that. And I just felt it was a little sly dig at us, because our group chat, the Chef U, we were always in conversation on ways, and it's not something you can just do overnight. You have to come up with kind of a plan and the best possible way to do things to help. And what we wanted to do was to help the front line and help the NHS where it was most beneficial. And we've been in them conversations, and these things take time and that, and then you're just kind of set back and put under a lot of pressure in that time. And it was a bit below the belt. And I think what we've come up with, the Players Together scheme, is a great thing, and hopefully now we'll see the benefits to that. And thankfully we've all come together at a good time, and we can really, really help the frontline workers.
I can see where you're coming from, because so many sports people do things that they don't want recognition for. They don't want people knowing what they're doing. They're just giving their time of it. And then when you get a belt, like a dig like that, you think, God, maybe I should have been blowing my own trumpet.
Yeah, you do. It was so out of the blue. We never really expected to see it. And then it all kind of spiraled out of control, and then there was a lot of people getting involved, and we want to do is help. We do realise the responsibilities that we have, and we do realise that we do need to stand up and help. And that's what we were trying to do, and thankfully, obviously, this scheme hopefully will work really well, and it will be a big help to the, as I said, to the NHS and the frontline workers.
Well, that is definitely the most important thing, that they stay well, because they're so important to us, for you as well over there and for us here in Ireland. Thanks so much, Andrew. We really enjoyed the chat, and I have to say we're looking forward to actually seeing you back playing football again, because I, for one, am sick of looking at Ruby.
I won't respond to that. Thanks, Enda, for taking the call. Now you know what I have to deal with here every day of the week.
Cheers. Thanks a million.
Best of luck.
I'll see you. Bye-bye.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. I'm starting to feel sorry for Donegal Callaghan.
Come on. Why?
Well, normally I only have two nights a week taking your digs and abuse. He gets it 5 nights a week. Just because there's no GAA or for the foreseeable future doesn't mean you have to take it out on me. I'm going to ring Donegal now in an hour's time and warn him what he's getting himself into.
You're missing something, though.
What am I missing?
I'm always really nice to Donegal. It's just you. I don't know why.
There it goes. There's more of it.
It's the opportunity, because usually it's you giving me abuse. So anytime there is an opportunity to get back at you, I have to take it.
You're so brave down a phone line,
that's it,
aren't you?
You're not here, so this is my time. These are my moments.
You're a bully. Yeah. Little HR opens.
Well, they're not, so it's grand. This is the perfect time to do it. But you're right, I am finding it hard, because we don't know when the GAA will be back. We heard from Alan Milton of the Communications Department of the GAA earlier, and he, like us, doesn't really know, and says there's no point in making any statements really about specific dates, because it is such an evolving time for sport. But I'm just going to have to get on with it. And I am happy to say that Andy Moran joins us on the line, so at least I have somebody to talk about football with. Andy, how are you?
Ruby, how are you doing?
Good,
I'm good. I'm like yourself. I'm missing sport in general, but particularly missing GAA. But listen, we'll have our time again hopefully soon.
Obviously, Andy, we're missing GAA, but you have businesses of your own. You have a couple of gyms on the go. I mean, how are you coping with all of that, and how is your staffing and that kind of business going?
Yeah, Ruby, we closed on, like many other businesses, we closed on the 13th of March, Friday the 13th, wouldn't you know? But we closed, and we closed all three. We've been lucky enough to be able to keep most of our staff on. All our full-time staff are still working for us. And it's strange, because you're doing stuff that you've never really done kind of previous, just to try to keep up contact. Because all our business is basically just about creating contact with people and making a little kind of community within the kind of gym industry, and that's what we try to do. So we're trying to keep that tipping over, but economy is a huge problem for us, and it's going to be a huge problem moving forward. So we're in an industry where we don't have, I suppose, perishable goods. We've kind of weight and gym equipment and bikes and stuff like that, and so they're obviously not going to go off. But the problem is, when we come back after this, what's going to be left in the economy for people to spend and, I suppose, to keep people in jobs once we go back. So that's the big worry for me and for, I suppose, the whole country and in particular our own little ecosystem here in Castlebar and Claremorris, just how we're going to keep the economy going and look after each other when we get back.
And the Mayo County Board haven't been on looking to rent some of that equipment to dish out to its own players, no?
No, I'd say they've plenty, to be fair. They've plenty, and I'd say there's home. I'd say home gyms, if you're in home gyms and getting them ready, and I know there's these bikes that you can kind of visually get into a kind of spin class and stuff like that. If you could have been in that business now, you'd have done very well. But no one hasn't been on to me, thank God, and we would just keep it as kind of help out as many people as we can with little bits and pieces if we can, you know.
Andy, Gaelic football, GAA, it's such an important part of communities, of people's lives, and Mayo is one county that it really is represented so well down there. And the championship is something that people look forward to so much. What's the mood like now in the county when there's so much uncertainty about something that's been so present for so long?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, and I know you've touched on this, like the important thing here is health and how people are getting on within the community and helping people out. And GAA clubs are doing a great job on that all throughout Ireland. There was a big campaign with the Super Value and Centre there out with local clubs, just getting people out to help. So that's brilliant, and it's great to see us doing that. But sport, as you know, as Ruby knows, bringing people together, you know, getting a sense of, I suppose, achievement and just happiness within a community, I think, is key. And it's a big miss. I know myself personally, I don't particularly miss playing county football. I didn't miss it this year, but I definitely miss watching the game. I miss the sport. I miss soccer. I miss rugby. I miss watching everything, really. And Gaelic football being the main sport in Mayo, it's been missed massively. And like it's funny when if you're from Kerry or you're from Dublin or even Donegal, yeah, when they're playing these old games and they're always playing All Ireland finals, they don't show too many semi-finals. So usually we're on the receiving. We have been on the receiving end of a lot of them losses over the last decade. So not too many happy memories are being shown on our side either. You know.
The GAA confirmed that the 2020 Intercounty Championship in hurling and football are unlikely to begin before the month of July, just now in the last few minutes as well. So it is still evolving and moving, as we said, and we are delighted to be joined by Enda King, Head of Performance Rehab at the Sports Surgery Clinic in Santry. Enda, we've been talking quite a bit, Ruby and I, about how long players would need to get back to peak fitness to be able to compete, and we've been arguing quite a lot about it as well. Just what are your thoughts on it?
I suppose there's two sides to look at it from. One is the performance point of view. How long will they need to condition and get up to speed from a physical point of view, but also from a skill point of view to be able to perform at their best or close to their best. And the second is from, I suppose, from my end, from an injury point of view, how much training will they need to have done and at a particular intensity to allow them to withstand the demands of the game, especially if... as may well be the case, you're working off an altered GAA season or maybe a slightly condensed season in terms of fixtures. The demands of playing week on week are slightly higher than when you've larger recovery periods. So you're looking at it really from both sides, as opposed to, I suppose, an injured player coming back. Many of the inter-county players currently will be doing, you know, prescribed programmes. I've heard in the Stevens previously, Don, but the work that they're left with to continue on with. So I think a lot of them will be bringing very good base levels of fitness and strength and power into the end of the lockdown. It'll be trying to identify the things that only group training and only playing matches can reproduce. And that's certainly around the areas of intensity and testing your skills under duress. I know in the AFL, they have a mandatory four-week period when the lockdown is over, so they'll have 4 weeks of training before fixtures regain or restart. I know in the Premier League, often they can be working off shortened pre-season time. So it very much depends on your baseline level of fitness. I think all of the inter-county players will have got a full pre-season under their belt, will have got a number of National League games, so they'll already be starting from quite a good base. It'll be just a case of ramping back up the intensity that, with all the best will in the world and watt bikes and whatever else, it's very, very difficult to reproduce that intensity and demand under fatigue until you're back into full training.
performance level is one thing, because I think everybody's going to be performing to the same level. There's nobody has a head start in anybody here. But from a risk point of view, leaving performance aside, purely from a risk point of view, Enda, how long will players need? Would a fortnight do? Will they need 3 weeks? Are AFL in or around right at 4 weeks?
Yeah, I think it again, I suppose it comes back to how long the lockout period goes on for and what their baseline levels of conditioning are. Certainly, you imagine that most teams will want a 3 to 4 week block, 2 weeks to start to get re-establishing their training loads and their intensity loads. And one of the big things in injury risk is always changes in training intensity. So if you don't want to go from you know, a continual level to really spike in training load, and a lot of the soft tissue in your injuries you'll see, whether it's calves or hamstrings, etc., are not that athletes aren't strong enough, but they're just not used to the demands of repeated sprints that they may not get the exposure to when they're training on their own. So I imagine they'll want a couple of weeks to re-establish that level of intensity and conditioning, and then a couple of practice games, whether that's in-house or against other teams, to expose that a bit further. So it's very difficult to see anything shorter of a 3 or 4 week block from an injury prevention point of view.
And Andy, just from the team dynamic point of view, when players are separated for so long and, you know, not communicating as much as they would, like on the pitch, off it, how long do you think they would need to get back in sync and be able to perform as a unit?
Yeah, I think there's many kind of elements to this. I think going on Enda's side of it, the performance side of it, I think we need to take in that this is the 30 person panel, male or female. Men's and women's game is 30, and each one of those players has a different personality. So my personality would be, I'd go up to the field, I wouldn't mind doing that, kicking balls, stuff like that. But in terms of doing the running base where there's no one watching you, that's going to be tough as well. And where Enda's saying that is, you'll have fellas at mid-30s, you'll have other fellas at 18, 19, 20 years of age, all different personalities, trying to get themselves in shape away from the management and away from the S&C coach, just doing it kind of in an external basis. In terms of the player dynamic and the team dynamic, you see it, you were slagging there about Dunican, you're only on the phone and stuff like that. When you're away from people, it kind of changes. No different within a team setup. Are lads doing the work? Do people, Joe, is there a big trust level there? So to me, it has to be 3 minimum, if not 4 weeks, when they get back, to get people kind of molded back in together, to give the management a chance to really kind of put in a game plan in place, and as Enda said, get the baseline strength and conditioning into a team to give them a chance to perform at their best and to be injury free.
But Enda, say a player coming back from injury as opposed to a player who has a baseline fitness here now, surely the guys now are at less of a risk than the guys coming back off an injury in a normal year.
Absolutely. I mean, any ability to keep loading, especially the likes of, you know, tendinopathies and soft tissue injuries, and they will benefit from the fact in your cardiovascular fitness that you were able to keep going throughout that period. But it's the intensity that is the big thing. And an example of this would be in 2011 in the NFL American football, they had a lockout over contractual disputes, and they missed the majority of their preseason. And they went from having 5 Achilles ruptures in the previous 5 years to having 12 of them within that one season, just in the pre-season. And so it comes back to, not only, as Andy alluded to, I mean, you can be training and, you know, many of us have bluffed along doing our own training. There's one thing to be training, but another thing to be training at the demands, especially at inter-county level, the demands and the intensity of being under pressure, the repeated efforts. And it's not just about training for the average demands of the game, but training for those dark moments when you have to do, you know, repeated sprints to tackle back and tackle forward. And also the consequence not only of serious injuries, but if we're working off a condensed calendar and the games are coming quick and fast, a hamstring pull might leave you out for 3, 4, whatever number of weeks it is. That's going to be the majority of games. There isn't going to be that period to have even a small soft tissue injury is going to have a massive ripple effect throughout that season. So it definitely benefits them that they're able to keep going, certainly from a fitness point of view. But again, going back to the watt bikes and whatever else, it's one thing staying aerobically fit and staying conditioned, but that's completely different than being conditioned to the demands of the game. And you know yourself in terms of riding out, and that it's one thing to be doing stuff in the gym and staying fit, but nothing beats getting back out and doing the workload that's specific to your sport and specific to your game. And so it certainly will help smooth that transition, but it won't be an automatic, well, I've been doing my own training work, therefore I can step right back into the demands of intercounty football.
But with everybody having a layoff, surely the intensity won't be as high.
It definitely won't, but it, again, that will lower the average entirely, but it won't. Those repeated sprints, those abilities to go and to run at max sprint and to do so after making three or four tackles and go again, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to reproduce that training on your own or training in isolation. And so they'll all be at the same disadvantage, which is an advantage, so to speak. But in terms of their injury risk, it's still going to be a massive step up, even if everyone hasn't trained beforehand. It's still going to be a massive step up in intensity from training on their own.
And Andy, I imagine as well, just with like a manager's hat on, it'd be difficult for managers coming back in and getting their players for the first time to kind of control what they're doing and to temper their expectations almost and to, you know, keep things at a level that's sustainable because they'll be so eager just to get back on again.
Yeah, if you look at it, we're five rounds in the league. If you look at it from my own perspective, and I'll talk about my own because they're probably... It's a team that I'm most familiar with. Like, they were trying stuff. They were bringing younger fellas in. There was older guys to come back. Shamie O'Shea, Chris Barrett, and these guys to come back in the last two, three rounds of the league. And now all of a sudden, they're not even going to get a league game. You know, if the younger fellas played, then you have the question. James has the question there. Like, who's good enough? Who do I put in? Who do I not put in? Which older guys do I bring back in? So just to go with Enda's side of it on a manager point of view is that you have players now that are going to play championship football who mightn't have got a minute of league football, so their first game could honestly be a championship game if it goes ahead later in the year. And for a manager, that's a nightmare. There's huge questions to have to be asked of players. Who do you want to see? Do you go with the tried and trusted that you've seen before, or do you go with these newer guys that you've seen in the first five league games? So, to be honest with you, it's a real headache for managers. As we said, a lot of managers are in the same position, but I do feel that in these situations, like really everything that mirrors kind of socially, the stronger counties probably have more of an advantage just because the numbers they have to pick and the fitness levels they're already going to be at once they've left the National League, you know.
Andy, thanks a million. Quandaries for everyone. And Enda, as usual, you have proved my theories wrong. Thanks a million for taking the call.
I get no solace in that. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Happy days.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Marie, no GAA till July. Poor Billy.
It's tough for people though, for everybody, because
I meant Billy listening to you.
Oh, that's a good point as well. But on a serious note though, for people like we, as Andy mentioned there, Mayo, it's such a big part of their lives. Like you'd said before, like Wimbledon, they look forward to it. It's their day out. They plan holidays around it. Like every single occasion is planned around going off to Crow Park or wherever the games are on. And potentially not having that is quite sad.
But that's, I don't know, not the point I'm trying to make, but the point I'm getting at, even to have it on the television, Marie, that you could sit down and watch it, that it's Galway versus Mayo, it's Kerry versus Cork, whatever it is that it's something to look forward to. And even though Andy King has proved me completely wrong and players are going to need 3 or 4 weeks to get back to a condition to play, I have another theory.
Oh?
Could you change the amount of subs? There's 30 on the squad, so as soon as lads are getting tired, have 15 subs to get the games back going quicker.
I think you'd have to go to Congress to do that, potentially. You can't
There's
really make...
There's one on this week, isn't there?
There's one on Friday, yeah.
Probably
send them an email there.
There probably has to be a motion 10 months ago to get on to the one
there
next
probably
week,
has
it?
Yeah, to make a drastic change like that.
But just for the you saw what the government could do with police and laws, surely the GAA could do make some emergency rule change.
Yeah, well, I don't know, it doesn't really work like that with the GAA. It's very democratic, so you'd have a lot of people who would have opinions on these things, and their opinions are usually heard and talked out at Congress, which I've been to on several occasions. So maybe, maybe not.
It just doesn't want to happen. You don't want it to happen.
I don't care. I just want it to be played.
Exactly. See, I come up with ideas. You're knocking them down. Come on, Marie.
Well, you're going to have to get your committee that you were talking about going.
I'll never get involved in the committee, Marie.
Okay, let's hear from Alan Milton, the Director of Communications with the GAA.
A number of weeks ago, at the very outset of this crisis, a number of contingency plans were drawn up, and they still exist, but I don't know how prudent it would be for the GAA to come out with fixed programmes or plans and then to be seen to be changing them every week or two. I think it wouldn't give the right impression. It would look like it was disorganised or indeed organised chaos, and that's not the case. So from the get-go, we've taken our lead from the medical experts. That will continue to be the case, and that will be the way the GAA will operate in relation to this issue.
We've heard Tony Houlihan at various stages saying mass gatherings are not going to go ahead. I mean, even at his very latest briefing, he was saying that he thinks that mass sporting gatherings, even at any stage this year, may be very difficult to control. I mean, what would the GAA's reaction be when you hear comments like that coming from him over the last 24 hours?
Well, a lot of these questions are being put to officials on an ad hoc basis. We're waiting to sit down with the HSE or with the relevant officials and hear it straight from the horse's mouth. We haven't had that communication officially yet. If it was to come, it would obviously paint a very, very challenging scenario, not just for the GAA, I might add, but for all organisations where people come together either to participate or to spectate. We all hope it won't come to that, and it's one of the reasons why we've been so proactive in advising and encouraging not just our members but all citizens to be as responsible as they can be, because the sooner the better we get on top of this, and perhaps the situation might lift earlier than it would otherwise.
The other thing, Alan, is look, lots of people want to play games, but there is something as well at the end of this for a lot of players involved, because there are competitions where we need to know outcomes. In terms of the league, there's a tier two competition. There's a lot of backlog for the GAA if we don't get a season this year.
Well, we've done an audit of the league games that are outstanding. Some of them are critical or are very important. Others are not so important, and we would prioritise in a scenario where we do get back to playing to ensure that the Allianz Leagues are completed for so many reasons, some of which you've just outlined. But there will be no shortage of activity if and when we do get back to play, and you can rest assured that the games at club level will be every bit as important as those at county level.
That was Alan Milton there speaking to Jackie Hurley of RT Sport earlier on. Now, moving on to the modern pentathlon. If everything was right in the world of sport, Natalia Coyle would be getting ready to go to the Olympics in a short few months. But Natalia, you aren't at the moment. What are you up to?
Oh, I'm definitely not getting ready for the Olympics in a few months anyway. No, I suppose like everyone else, kind of having to change my life a lot at the moment, and living in a 2K radius.
And you have five sports?
Yeah, five sports to do, but obviously there's no horse riding at the moment, and, you know, everything is tailored back hugely. So I can still run, which is great, and I can run with social distancing and 2 kilometres around kind of where I live. And then I'm cycling a bit as well on an indoor bike, just kind of, you know, try and keep up some training, because I obviously can't get in the pool. So it's another stimulus that I can do on the bike, and then, you know, I can do fencing, footwork and kind of a little bit of blade work, but, you know, no lessons and obviously not free playing anyone else. So it's quite a changed schedule at the moment.
You haven't invented a robot or something that you can fence with, no?
Sure, if you do that, put a patent on it and then send it right on over.
Pretty good idea, wouldn't it? And what about shooting? How are you practicing the shooting?
Yeah, you can still shoot indoors because it's laser, so we're still able to shoot. Which, to be honest, like for other people, maybe they're different. But for me, training kind of breaks up the day at the moment, you know, because every day is, I am losing track of what day of the week it is. And every day can be kind of broken up a little bit until I can do a training session in the morning. And then I'll probably do something in the evening as well, whether that's a bike or a run or maybe yoga or something like that, trying to break it up and just kind of fill the days, because otherwise they're quite long.
And Natalia, you had qualified for Tokyo. There is no fear that they will change qualification and make athletes re-qualify or anything, is there?
No, they've come out and they've said that any athlete that has qualified already for the Games, that qualification will be held up, which is great. And at the moment as well, I know for other athletes that are still looking to qualify, no one even knows when we're going to be back competing or when those qualifiers are going to be. So it's really nice to know that even though it's going to be a year later, I still am qualified.
Natalia, it's difficult enough, your sport, because I know from following you, there's been a lot of, you go to World Cups all over the world, and
yeah,
the situation now with travel and borders and just everything that goes with the COVID-19 puts everything in doubt, and sport and your sport are one of those things.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, I think that the IOC have come out and said really that there's not going to be any international competitions this year. There might be some domestic, but nothing kind of, no qualifiers will be this side of Christmas anyway. So that just means that this year really there's not going to be anything happening. And then after that, I suppose, your guess is as good as mine in terms of what way everything's going to happen. But yeah, there is this huge, we do four World Cups, we do Europeans, a World Championships, World Cup Final. We travel all around the world. And just before all of this is happening, we had our first World Cup in Cairo. And that was where Arthur, he won a medal at that as well. And, you know, we were planning the next World Cups. They were in Bulgaria, and then there was another one in Budapest. Then we were supposed to go to Korea for a month because there was a competition there in China. You know, we're all around the world. So it is quite a change now to be in one place for a long time.
And Marie, haven't been to, or Marie, today, Natalia, haven't been to an Olympics already in Rio.
I wish I was at an Olympics.
So, Marie, would you see no competitions between now and an Olympics, which your experience, as a plus for you or a negative?
Oh, that's a good one. I think I'll definitely, I suppose we'll wait and see what the schedule looks like next year in terms of all the competitions that will come up then. But, you know, up until a few weeks ago when they were saying that the games are going to go ahead, you know, I just, that was more stressful than anything because every day another training venue is shut down, rightly so, and every day it's getting more serious. And you're just thinking, well, how am I supposed to get ready for this sort of games coming up? How am I supposed to be in the best shape possible? And so it was quite a relief when they said that the games was going to be cancelled. But, you know, I suppose it just depends on how long it, society takes to, I suppose we're never really going to be back, what is going to be normal after this. But, you know, for us getting back to training, because we're going to be out of the pool for a long time. And I know a lot of other athletes are going to be out of their training venues for a long time. So that's going to take a good bit of time to work back up to get that base fitness. So I'll definitely be looking forward to some competitions when they come round. I'd say I'll be very hungry for them at that stage.
Natalia, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the running and the bit of shooting that you can do and whatever bit of blade work and all the other little bits and pieces that you're keeping you busy. And we wish you the best over the next few months.
Thanks, Elaine. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. So, Ruby, that's all we have time for. And you're gone for a few days now.
A few days off, yeah.
Dunica's back.
Looking forward to it. 4 days on the trot. Marie has me worn out.
It's tough old work, this radio presenting.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Dunica. Game on 2FM.